Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Terry Foy, joined today by Nick Osello. Nick, this is the first time that you and I have ever actually spoken to one another. We've communicated via like text-based mediums, but it's off-putting to hear your voice. How are you doing?
Thanks for saying it's off-putting to hear my voice. That's what anybody would like to be described as. But I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So obviously the PLL Championship Series is almost a week in the books, and we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about that, talking about your experience with this Redwoods team, and I would imagine a little bit more time talking about the amount of time that you spend on Twitter and the role that you play as the lacrosse Twitter enforcer. But first, I want to start by letting the audience know a little bit more about you. So to me, these are the pertinent facts, and I want you to fill in the gaps. You are from Colorado. You are the definition of a midfielder. You played lacrosse and then subsequently football at Notre Dame, and now you're a member of the PLL Redwoods. What else does an Inside Lacrosse listener need to know?
Other than that, I think you hit all the major pieces that people would care about, really. The only other things I'll say is, definitely like having more of a better time on social media. I don't take myself too seriously. And that's about it. And when you say I played at Notre Dame, let's make one thing clear. I rode the bench for 90% of my time. So I just like to get that out there before someone else chirps me for it. So you got to get ahead of the battle there.
There was a solid flourish there at the end, though. Do you have a particular memory, a highlight of your Notre Dame career that stands out?
For lacrosse or football?
Yeah, for lacrosse. Brag.
Okay. Honestly, I not really. It's always funny because you think there's like one shining moment, like, oh, it might have been like the comeback against Albany or this and that. But realistically, anytime me and my teammates get back together, we're like, man, you remember that one practice in January where it was negative 20 degrees and coach was just screaming at us all practice? Like, man, I'd give anything to go back to those days. So surprisingly enough, like the kind of cheap answer is just, oh yeah, it was a great game that we played, but it's always the little stuff and like the things that coaches would say to you and the grueling practices, because that's the 90% of the behind the scenes stuff, that we all remember and talk about and reminisce about. So it's kind of those preseason tough practices that I'll say were kind of the shining moments and really developed all of us into the good friends and teammates that we are today.
Right on. All right, so like I said, I feel like real critical bubble talk has been a little bit drowned out and maybe saved for now because there was so much action that unfolded, that all the attention over the 14, 15 days when the games were going on was about the games, which is great. But take us into the hotel. First of all, everybody was in the hotel. Was it one team to a floor? What was the, just paint the tableau.
Yeah. So you walk in and I think part of it is it's difficult to complain when your schedule for 3 weeks was wake up, play lacrosse and go to bed.
Totally.
So that put us at ease with any problems that we would have, but you were right. Every team had their own floor. You walk in, there was the lobby, which always had like snacks and drinks. And that's where like, if you ordered food, it would be dropped off. So kind of like you walk into the lobby, I would always grab like 2 salt and vinegar chips, a bottle of water and a coffee. And then we were lucky because we were the first floor. So a lot of teams, if they get off the bus, they have to take 3 batches of elevators up to whatever their floor, whatever floor they're on. But it kind of did have like, I hate to use the word dorm, but it did have kind of like, this is my floor and this is my entire team. And there are guys playing Settlers of Catan across the room while I'm hosting a poker game. And there are guys playing video games down the floor. And, somebody screams and we poke their head in. What was that? It's like, Ryder just won Catan or something. And then you would only see the other teams if you were either at breakfast. If they catered in a dinner or something, you would just kind of see them like in that communal area in the lobby. But for the most part, like teams just kind of kept to themselves. You might like throw a little stink eye, or if you see a buddy, kind of go give them like the weird COVID elbow bump. But that's it was pretty fun. Just you kind of found your pocket pretty quickly in your niche. Mine was poker. Guys were playing video games and guys were playing Catan. Those were kind of the 3 prevalent things.
So, in terms of like how much time you were actually off your feet and chilling versus the amount of time that you were doing stuff about being a better lacrosse player, like what was the breakdown and how did it evolve from, the kind of really intense practices? Or when I say intense, I'm sure that this was different across teams. I don't know that it was necessarily physically intense, but it was intense in the sense that you had a short window of time to go from like, oh, hey, Miles, nice to meet you, to now we're actually competing side by side and trying to win games that matter.
Yeah, so as far as the intensity factor, having Matt St. Laurent as your coach inherently makes it ramped up to 15 from the first second you step on the field. So we would be looking at other teams, and especially our 2-a-days to do the quote unquote camp, that week of camp, that was some of the harder days that we had. And then every team, and kind of when you get to this level, it's not necessarily so much about we need to drive into the ground, we need to condition, we need to do this. It's like, listen, you put in the work, you have the IQ. So it was just about finding kind of that chemistry. So like, the first couple days of practice were, does an umbrella set work with Miles Jones and Sergio Perkovic, both huge guys that are getting downhill? How does Brent Adams fit into it? Where does Kyle Harrison? And so kind of it's like trial by fire of, all right, we're going to run sixes and targeted drills for an hour to figure out what kind of works. And then so we did that for about 3 or 4 days. And then at the end of the day, it's not all about intensity. A lot of it is just kind of load management. So a couple of the older guys went up to coach and were like, listen, coach, like we have a game in 4 days, and some of the guys are pretty tired. And coach probably, said something under his breath and said, okay, I understand, we'll take tomorrow off. So it was very intense from the start. And then the intensity shifted from very aggressive physical practices to you better be dialing in, watching your film, getting this team meeting. And as far as the schedule, like a lot of it depended on if you had work or not. So like we have guys on our team that are working on Wall Street that can't take off just 3 weeks in a block. So they did a great job of like, hey, we're going to have a long day, but there's going to be a block right after practice before the next practice where guys can go get, 4 or 5 hours of work. And some of the other guys would either be recovering, would either be watching film, getting some extra reps in. So the load management was kind of dependent on coach and dependent on your outside situation. But me personally, like I'm fortunate, I worked for Adrenaline. So they were pretty understanding of like, listen, you're playing lacrosse, get what you need to get done, but let us know if we can help. So I thought it was a great balance of intense physically to start and then intense mentally, for the duration.
So one of the things that I found to be particularly interesting going into it was that it was going to be a physical war of attrition. The World Games were the comparison that people made, but the difference between that and this was, there weren't games that were going to be less competitive, where the average, the margin of victory was the only thing that was going to be in doubt. So
Right.
from that standpoint, how did you physically prepare?
As far as in the off season or like when I
Yeah,
was
like,
there?
well, I guess, in the May, June, and early July period when it became clear that this is what the event was going to be.
Yeah, so when that was structured, there was immediately kind of a scramble for a lot of guys. And what I did is I immediately recognized where I was last year and where I was in May and stuff was I needed to drop some pounds because, if we're playing once a week, I can gut out anything. But when you're playing every other day, I was 225 and I dropped down to like 217. Especially with kind of given the structure, it's like, listen, you can play one game and be a bruiser, or you can kind of maybe drop that role, be somewhat of a bruiser, somewhat of a bigger body, but you still need your legs to go up and down the field. Because like last year, I wasn't seeing the roster very, very frequently. So I could sit, I could blow all my energy in one game. But with the structure of this tournament, with nobody coming in, nobody coming out, it's like if you're on the team, you're getting used because every team is going to need to dip fully into their roster.
Right.
So I immediately kind of stopped squatting, stopped cleaning, and started doing a lot more agility. I tried to eat less Chick-fil-A, tried to work in a little bit less meat, a little bit more vegetables. And honestly, it's the best I have felt since probably my rookie year. So I was very fortunate to have the resources to kind of accomplish those goals that I had set out in May prior to our arrival.
And shifting the focus to the actual game action, obviously you guys had the first game of the series circled. What was that like? What was it like to just kind of like mentally prepare for this team that I would imagine you guys hate pretty good, and then get actually out on the field? Like, what were the jitters like?
Well, it first off, like it was a combination of just like intensity and passion and hatred and this and that. But it was also such a breath of fresh air going from not knowing if we were going to have a season to like, you know, holy crap, like we're actually getting ready to go play professional lacrosse again. And I think, you know, I think that manifested itself in one of two ways. I think some guys at the beginning of camp were a little bit too happy to be there. And I think some guys were a little bit too intense on their teammates. So by the time the game came around, it was still a pretty good balance of that. And, you know, if you know, I'm sure you know, as you, when you play at a high level, it's always like the first shift, you know, go out, go try to kill someone, go do whatever, and then get it out of your system. So like, you know, the first shifts we took against the Whips, you know, like I was sprinting around, I was trying to like cross check and like, you know, knock people on their ass. And as soon as I got that out of my system, coach was like, "Hey, Nick, great job, but that's not what you're here to do. You're here to play solid fundamental defense." And I'm like, "You know, you're right. I got it out of my system." And then from there, you just rely on your preparation. You know, I'm like, "Okay, I'm seeing the pass down, pick down with Rambo. I know I'm going to jump it. Just execute my role, wait for that rollback, and trust that the slide's going to be there." And, you know, every kind of small dodge, like there's always kind of that, the calculus going into it in the back of your mind. But that first shift was just like, I'm going to go out and, like, you know, try to kill someone. So the mental prep and the jitters, you know, I certainly think have a factor early in the game. But then kind of as you get settled and you realize the context of, A, you're playing lacrosse. B, it's a long tournament. You know, win every shift, but don't, you know, blow all your energy in one go. It really allowed us to kind of settle in.
All right, so your team had what was probably, I don't know, like every game had a storyline, is the way that I would put it. So you play the Whipsnakes, defending, you know, repeat of last year's championship, doesn't go your way. You're supposed to come back out on Monday, and then Mother Nature had something else to say about it. So then on Tuesday, you're the first team to play Matt Gaudette after he becomes a sensation. Take us into the locker room.
So pretty much like the whole Gaudette thing and what I'll speak to on that is a lot of times there are storylines that are pushed that have a little bit of relevancy but might be overblown. So when Epple pretty much tried to kill him, a lot of that was just, yeah, you know, we saw Gaudette, and like realistically, even though I punched Blaze in the face last year, I was like, come on, you're a rookie and you're chirping one of like the best goalies in the league, and he's also a beauty. Like, you know, whatever. I don't agree with that. And I remember I actually got a penalty checking him in the back in I think like the first or second quarter. And I remember checking my phone afterwards, and it was like, oh yeah, you know, this is Gaudette's game. Osello's like mentally weak, and he's falling right for the trap. No, like I'm just collapsing from the backside, and I'd rather hit him than let him score an easy goal. Like this had nothing to do with Gaudette. And then I think what happened with Epple was, I don't know if did you see that whole thing where Glaze bought a Ray Lewis cameo?
I did.
So Epple is like pretty much a disciple of Ray Lewis. Everything that Ray Lewis does, Epple is
Hence number
knows about
52.
it, can tell you about it. Yeah, hence number 52. And like him and I, in a funny little story, him and I actually almost got in a fight in a bar in San Diego about like Ray Lewis, because I was just like, yeah, you know, he's pretty good. And Epple was like, he's the best. And I'm like, all right, well, now he's not the best, just because, you know, we're both stubborn guys. But going into that game, I was a little worried because I saw this just, you know, the crazy Ray Lewis stare in Epple's eyes. And I was like, oh my God, he is going to kill somebody. So he channeled the energy of Ray Lewis into Gaudette. And I don't think there was any personal beef. I don't think there was anything. And, you know, to Epple's credit, as soon as the game was over and like the suspension and this and that, like he was like, oh shit, or oh crap, like, you know, I'm really sorry, guys. Like, you know, you guys are going to crush it. And he, you know, I can't say enough about how good of a teammate he is. And then this whole narrative became like Eppl wanted to kill Gaudette because Gaudette's, was saying all this. And I'm like, that's a little blown up. I think Eppl was just trying to set the tone and just overstepped it because, he was making Ray Ray proud. So.
So then on Wednesday, you guys played at, I think it was like an 11:30 Eastern start. I have to apologize. I missed this one. And it was a rescheduled game.
Don't blame you. Versus
the Chaos. And you won 8-7. It was the Miles Jones return party. Thoughts? What's it like for a guy to play against his old team?
First off, again, a lot of these narratives that are pushed, and it's, everybody was aware that the Miles and Salcedo, and they got into it a little bit on social media. And at the end of the day, when you're going into a game like that, every second that you pay more attention to something like that as opposed to the game plan is a second that you're taking away from the success of your team. So especially when they're two offensive players, there wasn't an instance in which they're going to be playing defense or going head to head against each other. But everybody kind of knew in the back of their mind, all right, we want to prove A, that, I think we were both 0-2 going into that game. And we're just like, listen, two 0-2 teams scrapping. Nobody wants to go 0-3. We need this game. And I think we matched up very well defensively, and our offense kind of had flashes of brilliance, because that second half of the Chaos game is kind of when we started to realize what kind of team we could be.
Yep.
I think we shut them down. I think they only had one or two goals in that second half. And we started to see Miles and Perkovic and Brent Adams and Kyle and everybody kind of just started to click. That storyline we really wanted to win. Half of it was just look at us getting the better of you guys in a trade. And then the other half was kind of just we really can't go 3-0 or 0-3. That is definitely not why we came here. Only other note I'll say about that is I just think that's a matchup where you have to be very defensive oriented off ball and communication heavy. And I think those are the strengths of our defense. As a guy like Eddie Glazner literally telling me to switch picks, sometimes I just let him be my brain. And I'm just like, yeah, you just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
So let's talk about Eddie a little bit, because he was one of the breakout stars of the championship series. And it's interesting because there are members of the Inside Lacrosse staff who have touted Glaze's value and quality for years. And right. have pointed to what is frequently pointed to, which is what he brings from a communication standpoint. But not all communication is created equal. It has to be effective. It has to be targeted.
Of course.
What makes his style so special?
Well, I think there are two things that go into it. And this is from the Coach Burns school of you will run a lot if you don't do it. And a lot of that is attaching a name to that communication. So I've played with some great communicators, but at the end of the day, when you hear your name screamed on defense, you're perking up. You're saying, okay, my name's being called. What is my role right now? And I remember it clear as day. It was in that Chaos game. And I was on the bottom left and we had to rotate, and I made an approach to the top left. And Eddie was in the middle, and he was the slide guy. So I know that's really kind of boring for me to set the scene, but just know that it was very difficult for him to know where I was at all, let alone he Ocello come in as the two guy. I'm going to need you. And when he said that, I was like, first off, dude, how did you know that I was the two guy in that situation? That's crazy. And second off, I immediately sprinted down. So it was kind of it's kind of that two part of he knows every moving part and every inch of the defense, but he attaches that name with a sense of urgency so well that you have no chance but to listen to him. I think when you hear and when you watch Timmy save that Curtis Dixon shot at the very end of that game in overtime, which I can't believe that Timmy stopped that. But you hear Glaze clearly yelling Finn, yelling at Finn Sullivan to rotate. And just know that that's an everyday occurrence. That wasn't because it was overtime. So he's the best that I've ever received as far as urgency, specificity, attaching a name to it, and IQ. It's a very, very difficult balance, and he brings every piece to the table at a very high level.
And he learned how to play and the bagpipes right?
Yeah, and he learned how to play the bagpipes, but I need to like chirp him or something because I'm just pumping his tires too much. So his neck is too long.
All right, let's move on to the fourth game. And this is the moment that everybody's been waiting for. There was a photo that emerged post-game. You and Kyle Hartzell lined up hip-to-hip on the wing of a face-off. I should mention that you guys beat the Atlas 10-9 to finish the group play 2-2. Were you actually saying something to him?
Yes. And just out of like kind of respect for the game, you know, I won't disclose too much of what I was saying, but just know that it was a lot of it is kind of what you would expect. Just like, you know, hey, you know, like, the very G-rated version of it is just like, hey man, you should pay your bets because it's not making you look good.
Right.
So that is what I'll tell like children that I said.
So let's just fill in the gaps for people. I can't imagine that you're listening to this podcast and don't know what we're talking about, but the origin was, I believe, the championship game 2019. I don't know what prompted Kyle Hartzell to say, but he said to you that you wouldn't make a roster and that he would bet you $1,000, and you took the bet. And then once you made a roster this year, you prompted him to pay up. And it was an ongoing saga before ultimately he relented, which is something that needs to be discussed on this podcast as well. But what was it like coming away from last year and just like, you know, having this guy, like what was the origin? Why did it start?
So it originally started because I can't remember what game it was, but in our game, there was something about in the championship last year, Hartzell chirped Apple, I think, about like, I'll bet you $1,000 that you don't win the championship. And Apple took that bet. And yeah, like I wasn't really even really involved because I wasn't playing much at that point, but you know, just being who I am, I just had to kind of like dive in. And they had just lost bad. They lost like 25 to like 10 or something. And Hartzell immediately jumped online and was like, yeah, like pay up Apple. Like rumor had it that the Venmo was requested before Apple got back to the locker room. So Apple paid that bet. And they were like kind of going back and forth. So I said, like, Kyle, like, I'll bet you $1,000 that your team doesn't make the championship next year, saying like, hey, why are you chirping someone that just lost in overtime when your team didn't make it? And his response was, I'll bet you $1,000 you don't make a roster. And I was like, all right, well, you know, I'll take that bet. And I talk a lot of smack online just anyways. So I had forgotten about it. And then when I got A, added to the roster, and B, they kind of like were making that announcement, and I tested clear of COVID. Barstool Jordy actually reminded me of this bet, and I was just like, all right, going into it, you know, I'd like $1,000, who wouldn't? So I started like this whole thing of like, are you going to pay up this and that? And like the evolution got out of hand pretty immediate. Cause he was like, no, like, you know, I'm never going to pay you. Like you should pay me. And you must be really hurt for money. And I was just like, all right, like whatever, like let's take me out of the equation. How about we just donate it to charity? And the Redwoods had partnered with the Owls.
That's,
yeah, sorry, go ahead. Feel free to cut me off. I'm just ranting at this point.
That's chess. At this point, like that is a chess move. That is a you know, king's rook to L2. I don't know. I don't play chess. I'm not going to use the right thing. But like that is a very good strategic move in order to increase the percentage of Twitter that is behind you.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. So I was like, all right, take me out of it. Insert a charity, like. Not only does that make me look like the good guy, but if he doesn't pay, now he looks like the bad guy. So it's like, all right, sure. That worked really, really well. And then it became this whole thing where it's like, I actually stopped because I was like, all right, as negative of a prick as I am on social media, like it's kind of gotten out of hand. So after that game, You know, I just was like, all right, it's gotten out of hand, and he was getting into it with Ty Zanders, and I won't comment on that, but it was getting pretty ugly. And I actually reached out to some old coaches, and I was working with the Owls because this GoFundMe that I started had recently surpassed $10,000, which blew my wildest expectations. So the lacrosse community rallying around that was awesome to see. And then it made me realize two things. This whole saga made me realize two things. The first was that people donate for a reason. Like, if I just started a GoFundMe out of the blue, it wouldn't have gotten nearly the track record. So the entertainment value of our stupid social media beef led to the Owls receiving over $15,000. So, like, A, just what a story, what a weird year, what a weird time we're living in. And B, it's like, on kind of like my high horse preacher note, I can't sit here and preach to these high school kids, and Kyle's a big face of the PLL and lacrosse in general. And I can't sit here and talk about how great the community is and how awesome, you know, the pro guys are and what it means to be a lacrosse player while also being an asshole on Twitter. So I met up with Kyle in person after he had paid. So credit to him for paying. We met in person and just shook hands and were like, listen, it got out of hand. Like, you know, never meant for it to get this big. Like, I'll hate you on the field, but let's be better role models. Let's be good people off the field. Because as much as I don't like the term influencer, you know, there are people that are following me that are like, look at that, you know, piece of trash that's just talking a bunch of smack. So I wanted to back up a little bit of what I preach to the high school kids that I coach and just say, like, listen, like, sometimes you're going to have to be the bigger man. Even if you don't like someone, you're going to have to make an excuse and make a way to just be formal and cordial, because what kind of life are you living if you're just going to let this consume, you know, who you are for the next year?
Right.
So that's my preacher moment. And now we can go back to our regularly scheduled internet tough guy.
So it's a great segue into talking about Twitter explicitly, which is, Why are you the lacrosse Twitter enforcer?
I think a lot of it really started with just not being happy with a lot of what I was seeing from pro lacrosse players. Cause, you know, I'll throw Westberg under the bus right now. Like, Westberg is, I think, one of the funniest, the most charismatic, the greatest teammates, the really good lacrosse player. And if you go to his Instagram, if you go to his Twitter, it's like, oh, this is just a spokesperson for Pure Vital Labs. Like, that's all he does. And there are so many guys that are so funny, creative, engaging. And you just look at their Twitter and it's like, really excited for the game tomorrow. Like, hope we play well. And I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Like, be funnier. Like, be the guy that I know who you are. So as far as enforcer, like, I always use humor in a way that makes me like a commodity in the locker room. Like, I will always preach that whatever I accomplish on the field won't touch what I've been able to bring in the off the field sense. And I take pride in that. And it's always making people laugh. It's always keeping things light. And it's always kind of bringing that sense of, like, you know, I think one of the first things that I said to Miles was like, you know, listen, I hope you don't mind that I, you know, kick your ass in camp. It's for all those times you beat me in college. And it was like, you know, ha ha ha, like, chirp, whatever. And so I started bringing that to social media, specifically Twitter, because Instagram, you know, my captions are stupid, but I have fun with them. Facebook is, you know, for dinosaurs.
Right.
TikTok, I'm too old for. I feel like a predator. But Twitter is kind of that perfect. You can rattle off quick chirps, quick things like that. So I just kind of started to, like, you know, poke the bears. We, you know, me and Eddie Glazer did this thing called the clout police for people that are, you know, just taking social media too seriously and being too boring. It's like, if you're going to be a presence, why would it only be workouts? Why would it only be nutrition? Why would it only be this? Like, how about you talk a little smack? How about you have a little bit of fun with it? And, you know, I think a guy like Matt Rambo is a good example. That guy's a big rosy cheeked beauty. And he's starting to kind of get this following as, like, a rosy cheeked beauty who will chirp a little bit and eat a Philly cheesesteak. And I'm like, perfect. So, like, I wanted to start kind of shifting, like, boring, generic social medias where it's just this train of people commenting on each other's workouts to, all right, here's a little creativity. Here's some jokes. And you know, an enforcer is just kind of like a funny role for being an internet tough guy, so.
The Cloud Police is absolutely on your tail if you are working out shirtless, correct?
Yes, there are a couple clout infringements, and working out shirtless is at the very highest level,
All
so.
right, but there are a couple of other things that you have informed us of. So we've got all fat guy team, and we've got all bar fight team, and you've received some pushback on some of your selections. Would you like
Oh
to
yeah.
offer any revisions since these have been posted in the last couple of days?
First off, I'll revise what you just said. It's not fat guy, it's thick boys. All right. We live in 2020 and you gotta be politically correct. It's thick boys, not fat guys.
Okay. I will accept
Now that we
it.
got that out of the way.
I will accept it, except that I will say that they're always going to be fat boys in my heart.
All right. You know what? That's fair. Agree to disagree. What a guy I am for not, you know, not calling you out. What we did and what Gutterding brought to my attention was Mike Manley on the all bar fight team. And as much as I think I'd like Rowlett on my side, I might have to substitute him for Manley because I was DMing back and forth with Justin, and he was just like, no, that's like having gone to college with him, that's somebody that you want on your team. And when, you know, you kind of have that's pretty good. I think that's the only revision that I would make on either. But no, I mean, I stand by it, and you know, I think I know the players in the league well enough. The bar fight team, I didn't know that Canadians were so defensive about them being tough. They were like, why would you put Americans when, you know, the guys that were growing up in Peterborough would kick anybody's ass? And I'm just like, all right, you know, that's sure.
Well,
Like, if that's
see,
what, if that's the hill you're going to die on, go for
we're learning through our Twitter interactions. It's not all performative art. This is about becoming a more cultivated citizen of the world.
Exactly. It's a flowing river, you know, it's not a boulder, so.
So we got you guys beat the Water Dogs in the opening round. I took a couple on the chin for my pick of the Water Dogs. I thought they were gonna get hot, and that didn't happen. You guys happened to them, and then obviously put in an epic showing in what I think was probably the game of the tournament, second half comeback that fell short in overtime to the eventual champs. Not to get serious, but to get serious for a second. What's it like to go into that locker room and realize that you hadn't accomplished your goal, but once again you put in a yeoman's effort?
No, so especially at Notre Dame is, you know, we never won the championship. Like, guys will chirp us for it and blah blah blah. But you know, like it's never necessarily like, oh, how did your season end? It's always like, is that a loss that you can live with? And I, with it being 8-2 at halftime, and with it being this and with it being that, like I can absolutely live with that effort that we put out. And like, just anecdotally speaking, like my shoulder was coming out of my sock in like the second quarter, and like everybody was playing through pain, and we were all playing for each other. And I can sit here and talk about like all of the, you know, like all of the movie tropes, like, you know, these are your brothers, play for them, this and that. And it's like, well, that's kind of nerdy. But at the end of the day, a lot of those are true. And, you know, as big of a bummer as it is, I'll take that loss any day of the week, if you have to lose. Just so, you know, it is a bummer, but for us to have that comeback and for us to leave literally everything we had out there on the field, you know, there wouldn't really be much that I would change about that effort. And, you know, especially when you get to this level, every player, everybody's suffered defeats, everybody's had tough losses, and you can find solace in the fact that, you know, shit, you go back and you watch that game, you pause it at halftime, and you tell me that that's going to go into overtime. All right, good. Well, way to stage a comeback. We got to see Matt Kavanaugh in prime Matt Kavanaugh form. And honestly, just, you know, again, there are a lot of hills to die on, but the just because we lost means that we have to throw the season out is not one of them that I'll ever stand on. So, you know, just to get a little bit serious, it is a bummer, but again, just to have those 3 weeks that we did, and boy, did we have a night after that loss. That's a season I'll never forget, and I'll always take the positive from a season as opposed to the negative. So.
So I've asked probably a dozen people this already so far, and I've been surprised because not a single person has deviated. Everybody's answered the exact same way. Would you prefer a 3-week bubble tournament like what you just experienced to a regular, normal 13-week long season?
Me personally, I would like.
You're the first. That's why we get Nick Cosello on the podcast. He is the outlier. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like that's a selfish answer from my standpoint because work is very easy for me to get that 3 weeks in. And realistically, like from where it was last year, not knowing if I was going to make a roster into, okay, I'm on the roster, I am going to have to be utilized. Maybe it's just because April, May, June, and most of July were so bad. But that 3 weeks was something that I hadn't experienced in my entire life. Even those summer camps in high school that were a blast couldn't touch these last 3 weeks just because, we're all older. We're all, doing whatever we have to do for our jobs, our family, our girlfriends, our moms, our kids. And it was just such a great 3 week break from everything where all we had to focus on was how good of friends we can be, how good of teammates we can be, and how good of lacrosse. I'll take that any day of the week over a Monday to Thursday, maybe Friday mid-morning of real life, and then lacrosse on the weekends. I mean, I'll always opt for the biggest bunch of 3 weeks of, getting away from reality and getting in a bubble. That was the most fun I've had in a long time.
I not only appreciate that answer, I suspect it would be mine, and I'm glad to hear you say it. It makes me feel like I'm not crazy when, Brody Merrill and Marcus Holman and everybody else are telling me that they would rather play a normal season. But we got to wrap this up because you are in the midst of recovery, and we got to let you get back to it. And I'm sure that there's a Chipotle bowl waiting at the end of this
Ooh,
hard-earned
I hope so.
conversation as well. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, that's now that you mentioned it, I'm gonna have to go pick one up. So thank you.
Quick word association to bring this podcast in for landing. All right. First
All
thing that
right.
comes to mind.
Yeah.
Kevin Corgan.
Legend.
Mike Golic Jr.
Iconic.
Jerry Byrne.
I'm scared.
Patrick McEwen.
Dork.
Matt Carwek.
Friend.
Quint Kesnick.
Hardo.
Brian Kelly.
Scared.
You can't use that. It's you use that for Jerry.
I'll say, all right. If it's not scared, then I'll say surprisingly pleasant.
Got it. Okay. And we'll wrap it up with an absentee from the bubble, Matt Landis.
Oh man, what a guy. Like that's all I can say. What a guy.
Nick Acello, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. We learned a lot about the bubble. We learned a lot about what it's like to be a Twitter enforcer and a clout policeman. And look forward to talking again soon.
Gotta thank you. It's still weird to hear your voice, so I look forward to taking this offline and going on the DMs again.